Hour number four, Bickley Murata here on this Tuesday, live from the Ak-Chin Community Studios on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station. Time to talk some football, NFL, college football. We can go either way with our next guest. He is a college football analyst for Fox. He's also part of the Brock and Salk podcast at our sister station, 710 ESPN in Seattle. Brock Huard, our guest on the Coulter Automotive Group Sports Line. Brock, how are you, man?
Good afternoon, fellas. I'm doing great. We actually taped our podcast this morning. Tuesdays are kind of like the old days for me of going in the studio and cranking a bunch of stuff out and looking at all those poor souls that have to do radio every single day. Oh my God.
You're reading my mind, Brock. You're reading my mind. We'll go inside baseball here.
Oh my God.
Do you feel like you're stealing money at this point? I mean, be honest. After doing a morning show for that long.
Oh, I just feel rejuvenated. I'm getting enough sleep. People have said I hardly recognized you anymore when I was doing the old thing like a zombie every day, every single day. And now it's just once a week. I'm high on life. Let's go. I get to talk to you guys.
Yeah.
I have time for other people, so let's make this happen.
Well, good, because we're going to stretch you out, man. We got a lot to roll at you. All right, I'm going to start outside the box, because something that struck me, I saw Lamar Jackson and Deshaun Watson exchange jerseys, and not only are players exchanging jerseys this year, they're getting real intricate in the way they sign them. They're personalizing them to a way I've never seen before. We saw Nick Bosa and Kyler Murray do it on Sunday. Back in the day when you were playing, I'm sure you didn't exchange jerseys, but had you, is there somebody's you wish you could have attained?
Ooh, that's a good question. Yeah, probably Tom Brady. Just a ton of respect for some of those guys that in my era, you know, it started to hit stardom, but also had done it for a long, long, long time. It is interesting you bring that up, because I thought you were going to paint the question of, can you imagine doing that? And I remember being with Peyton, and Peyton never said a bad thing about anybody. But there were a few guys that I remember sitting in our QB meeting room, and he'd be like, man, I don't know how they have all this joy and can smile after a loss and have that interaction. Like, it was just a handshake and go. But to have just this like love fest, especially for the loser in some of those battles.
Right.
It's kind of remarkable to watch today how quickly guys can flush it, find that camaraderie, find that kinship that wasn't necessarily around, I think, decades and decades ago. But yeah, probably for me, just kind of the utmost respect for certainly those quarterbacks that did it for a long, long, long time.
Well, I like the way you answered the question better than the question I asked. So props to you, Brock.
He is rejuvenated.
You are rejuvenated.
Oh, I mean, I would have never thought that way if I'd been doing my show every single day. I would have just been, you know, trying to just stay afloat. Now I'm energized. Now I take questions different directions. So, yeah, let's go.
That's great. That's
Brock Huard, our guest here on Bickley and Murata. Let's focus on the NFL team in your city, the Seahawks. And I think, I'm surprised they're as good as they are, but I'm also foolish. Why would I doubt Russell Wilson and Pete Carroll as a combination at this point? But I think they've overachieved, and they're a really good team, Super Bowl contender at this point. Are you surprised at all with how competitive, how strong they've looked this year, Brock?
Yeah, I would say borderline even shocked at 8-2. But I did dig into some numbers for our little podcast we did this morning, and they're 7-1, I believe, in games decided by 8 points or less this year. 7-1. In the previous 7 years for Russell Wilson, you would think, oh yeah, I mean, he's always that way. He's got more fourth quarter and overtime wins than anybody. He always wins the close ones. That's not the case. In the previous 7 years, he's actually under 500 in games decided by 0 or 8. So is the worm going to turn? Is it going to get back to what's been traditionally for 7 years, you know, a situation where it's a coin flip at best in those situations, and maybe even a little less than 50-50? Or is he and Pete and this team going to just continue to find miraculous ways to win these close games? Because frankly, you know, as I look at the schedule over the next 6 weeks, I think almost every one of them is going to be a one possession game. They don't have the defensive talent to run away from anybody. And they still have some, I think, inexperience on the perimeter of guys that haven't done it at the highest level for long periods of time, that I think it'll be incredibly competitive the rest of the way. And to be sitting at 8-2 is borderline miraculous.
All right. Well, I want to ask your take on a couple of Cardinal-related issues, because here in Arizona, we're trying to wrap our heads around what in the heck happened to David Johnson. And the way that he runs the football now, I said it earlier, it's like he runs like an offensive lineman who just picked up a fumble and started running with it. He's plotting. He's just not the same guy. Have you been around running backs who just lost their taste for battle? What do you think is happening in Arizona with David Johnson?
Do you guys remember Thomas Rawls?
Yes.
Yeah.
With the Seahawks?
Uh-huh.
Yeah, he was a guy that I think had a 1,000-yard season. He had like a 200-yard game. He filled in for Marshawn. It was like, wow, how in the world did they find this undrafted free agent guy? And you didn't miss a beat. He was ferocious. We wrote, you know, our producer, Boy Howdy, wrote songs about him, lots of songs, like amazing, like just parodies and fun. And the guy was hilarious. And he opened his mouth and you kind of loved what you heard. And then you watched the physical violence he ran with. And then he got hurt and he was done. I mean, he got hurt and literally he could not function again. And to the point where Mike Salk on one of our last sit downs with Pete said, man, I got to ask you, what in the heck happened to Thomas Rawls? And Pete's like, long story, we'll talk about it off the air at some point, you know, maybe way down the road, because he just disappeared. Mm-hmm. And obviously David Johnson had more of a track record than Thomas Rawls. He got paid an extension. He had more sustained success, but I think equally got nicked up, got injured, and yeah, he's nowhere near the same guy. So I think that position, as much as anyone, you could talk to an analyst in probably every town, and they would quickly rattle off a name like Thomas Rawls in every market, where that position more than any other, I think, can simply fall off the cliff.
Yeah, I got to ask you a non-football related question as a follow-up here, Brock. Did you encourage your producer to keep writing these parody songs, or did he do it on his own?
Because we have one of those producers, too, but we can't get him to stop.
Well, are they good?
No, they're terrible.
The writing is good. The performance lacks a little bit, I'll be honest.
Well, with Boy Howdy jumped the shark when he tried to sing Adele. So he had, like, lots of good ones. He can do the rock ones pretty good, and, you know, there were all sorts of parodies with Rawls. Keep on Rawls and Rawls and Rawls. And he had some good ones. But when he went Adele, that's when it kind of jumped the shark. And I think that was the last non-platinum winning record that he spun.
Wow. All right,
now back to football. On the David Johnson front, yes. The Cardinals paid him a lot of money, $39 million over 3 years. He's in year two of that deal. And I know, regardless of how this shakes out, they're not going to get the bang for the buck that they were hoping for. When are NFL teams going to stop paying running backs altogether, or is that ever going to happen?
Yeah, that's a good question. And, you know, I would say the other position group that jumps out, and at least in my era that I can remember personally watching, are defensive linemen. Mm-hmm. That you pay a defensive lineman and all of a sudden, wow, Khalil Mack was awesome for that 1 year. Yeah. Is that really worth the bang for the buck? Albert Haynesworth was a monster, and then he got paid. And those guys that just have to be violent, right, and just have so many collisions game in, game out, series in, series out. Or do they have that same stinger, right, that, you know, when they were fighting for that and were incentivized to play at that level versus, you know what, I got lots of millions in the bank and I'm pretty good and, you know, I don't really have to either run or tackle with that kind of violence. I think that is always the question that comes about when you pay those guys that kind of money. I wouldn't want to be in that position. Right, the Seahawks way back when, you know, a very familiar name was Sean Alexander. And Sean is a good friend of mine. He's a great guy. And I remember when they were in that position, I think he was coming off of an MVP season. And it was like, wow, I don't know if you're ever going to get, you know, in this contract what you've already gotten from him. Well, and it turned out that was exactly true. I think he'd probably be a better comp. Certainly than Thomas Rawls, because Sean accomplished a ton, had a nearly 30 touchdown season. But go look at his numbers after that mega contract. And, yeah, I think those stories are out and about. And ultimately, you know, that's why that position of general manager and paying those people and counting on them to be equally incentivized is awfully, awfully difficult.
Good point. And to me now, it's almost like spend the money on the offensive line and get the running back anywhere else. And that seems to be a smarter play. All right, let me ask you about this, because one of the fascinating things about the Seahawks is your franchise endured one of the worst Super Bowl losses ever. You lost a hallmark defense that came with its own nickname, and yet you've sustained pretty much everything. You haven't fallen off the cliff. That hasn't been the case in Arizona, and now the Cardinal defense is kind of coming under the crosshairs for a lot of soft performances, for not being able to close out teams at the end of the game, for not being able to cover tight ends. Where do you go with a story like this? Do you look at the defensive coordinator? Is it almost always the talent? Does our general manager bear the blame for this? What's your take on the way the Cardinals are playing defensively?
Well, I would point to the Seahawks first, a place that I've got obviously a lot of background here the last dozen years or so, and just kind of watching every play, you know, having an investment in their success. The better they did, the better our show did, the better our station did, and everything else, and just being really, in some ways, emotionally wired in with those guys. And when you have owner and you have president, GM, you have head coach, you have quarterback, you have those things in order, your house in order, and that way you have a chance, I think, to sustain success against many others that don't. But when you've got turnover at coach and turnover at quarterback and turnover at GM and, you know, and inconsistencies in some of those places, you run the risk of being what the majority of the NFL is. And that's constantly up and down. And I think, you know, that's probably how I would answer it, just kind of up close in Seattle, the marriage between John Schneider and Pete Carroll, and the fact that they didn't fight and claw and have egos that said, nope, it was my doing. Nope, it was my doing. It was the, you know, the ingredients I gave you. Nope, it was what I made of those ingredients. They never do. They're egoless in that way relationally. And that is so stinking hard to find. And, oh, by the way, a quarterback that is lockstep with his head coach. I mean, walks like him, talks like him, speaks like him. So I think that marriage, you know, all of those marriages have allowed just for the, you know, the foundation to remain strong. I look at Arizona, I see a bunch of turnover in some of those spots, yeah. Right? At quarterback, the decisions made, at head coach, at coordinators, and you just have so much movement there. I think it is awfully, awfully hard, you know, to sustain or build any strong foundation moving forward.
Rocky Ord, our guest here on the Coulter Automotive Group Sports Line. He's a college football analyst for Fox, also part of the Brock and Salk podcast. Switching to college, and I'm fascinated by what's going on in the Pac-12, especially up in your neck of the woods with Washington. I mean, 2016, the Huskies qualify for the college football playoff. They run into a buzzsaw in Alabama. But I think the thought at that point, maybe I'm wrong, was this is just the beginning for Chris Peterson and this program. And here we are 3 years later. They're under 500 at this point in a less than dominant Pac-12. What is the level of unrest or dissatisfaction or frustration, whatever word you want to use, about Chris Peterson and the direction of that program in Seattle?
Well, I think for anyone that's sane in Seattle and just not emotionally, you know, held hostage to their emotions, and then they look at, you know, this run that he's been on. So, yes, 16 was a playoff, 17 was a Fiesta Bowl, 18 was a Rose Bowl. There's been two conference championships in those 3 years. Other than a couple years with Don James, you've not had a run like that in 50 years. So, we talk about sustainability and just a strong foundation of what he's built in his staff and his recruiting, places that, you know, it wasn't in a long, long time. And you'd have to look at, you know, just a 2 or 3 year stretch that Don James had is a comparable, and that's about it. So I think for the sane people, you lean into that. Recruiting has been phenomenal. This year has been a severe disappointment. Last year, offensively, a severe disappointment. So, you know, is there going to have to be some staff changes on that side of the ball? Possibly. Are they going to have to evaluate, you know, just kind of systematically what you are doing in today's college football offensively? I think so, to a degree. But, man, that guy is rock solid. To me, one of the five best in the profession. You better keep him and hope that he continues to coach. I think, you know, as an alum, my fear is that he's just going to say, I'm good. You know, I'm good. I've done enough. You know, I'm just not maybe built like some of these others in this marketing sales world. And eventually we'll walk away from coaching while he's still able to do it. Much more so than any pressure that anyone's going to put on him for unrealized expectations being met.
All right, Brock, last thing, and we appreciate your time. Pac-12, I said less than dominant, but there's two teams that are right on the doorstep of a playoff, and they're both pretty good. Do you think the Pac-12 gets a team in, and who would you favor? Do you think Oregon's better than Utah?
Yeah, I think that all depends, unfortunately, on what happens around them, what happens with Georgia, Clemson run the table. Like, you know, I think they get in ahead of the Big 12, and I think our early rankings have kind of proven that and shown that of what the committee thinks between those two conferences. It's Clemson and nobody else in the ACC. So I think it really depends on what happens in the Big 10 and in the SEC, and they're going to be, unfortunately, prisoner to some of that. Those two teams are elite. They're senior-driven. Both quarterbacks are seniors that absolutely elevate everyone around them. Defensively, they're balanced at every level. I'll tell you this, if those two match up in Santa Clara, I think ASU is going to give Oregon a game this weekend. I don't know what you guys think, but I do. I think it sets up just their system defensively. If what they do, as aggressive as they are, it's at home there in Tempe. I think they circle the wagons for Herm and those guys. I think they play their tails off. I think that's going to be a competitive game because it is hard to go unblemished in conference play and go 9-0.
Yeah.
So I think that will be a challenge for Oregon. But if they get through that, they're going to beat Oregon State and they're going to meet Utah, and I would favor Utah. Those dudes are nasty.
They are.
They hit. They have seven seniors on defense. They are built for right now in the three triplet seniors. So this is their season.
Yeah.
They're built to do it. And they would go, by the way, I think toe-to-toe with a bunch of those teams and give Clemson a game and give Ohio State a game and give Georgia a game simply because of the veteran leadership and just how nasty they play
defensively. It's funny you should say that because watching them just destroy ASU, I thought this defensive line could hang in the SEC. I remember having that thought, and then I thought, oh, that's ridiculous. And then hearing you say it,
it's not. Kevin Sumlin said it last year. You know, we sat in that meeting, if you remember that beautiful debacle of a game that I got to call that I think was, I don't know, 40-0 at halftime in Salt Lake. And we sat with Sumlin the night before and his staff who'd been in the SEC, and they're like, yeah, this is the one SEC team in our league, man. This is this front right here. And while they lost a couple linebackers to the league, they returned all of them big boys, and their secondary is better. And, that's a crew that, as I said, I don't know if I would predict them, and I wouldn't, to beat Clemson or to beat Ohio State, but they would not get their doors blown off, and they'd go toe-to-toe with them.
Yeah. Brock, thanks so much for the time.
Good
Always
stuff,
appreciate
dude.
You joining us. Best of luck with the podcast and everything else, and enjoy all that free time.
Stay well-rested, Brock.
Yeah, have me Brock. Anytime. You got my number. I'm refreshed. You just let me know.
What are you
want to talk.
What are you doing tomorrow?
See you, Brock.
Thanks, Brock. Appreciate it. Brock Ewart, our guest here on the Colter Automotive
Great
Group
dude.
Sports Line.